It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 19th day of July, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That's where you go, of course, if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is the chat room in the 3 hours that this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round. And yes, indeed, as a matter of fact, if you pop by right this very instant, you'll be greeted by early arrivers, Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime and veteran indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage skilled navigator, chooses not to become man cave via the folding of space, right? And I guess we should add to his other titles, Slayer of Brain. That's another. Thank you, Sparky. I appreciate that. I really don't like getting pictures of the goddamn devil's diaper in the middle of the program. It's awfully helpful. Thank you. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is Titanic Tuesday. It is a day for taking note of, not exactly celebrating, but taking note of manifestations of Titanic intellect, particularly Titanic right-wing intellect. And all that comes with seeing a vast iceberg whilst in an ocean liner and yelling full steam ahead, flank speed. Let's go make us some ice cubes, fellas. Yeah. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so consequently, we send out thanks. We send out profound thanks to our 19th day of the month subscribers, and that means thank you very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut, and thank you to Clayton. Thank you, Clayton. Thank you to Sharon. Thank you for being partial sponsors of the program. It is so helpful in keeping all of this going because, well, it's just a struggle. That's all there is to it. And as far as fundraising goes, well, the fundraising goal today stands at $570. Thanks to everybody for keeping it as low as it is. What does that mean? That means that $270 is yesterday, $300 is today, and if we could help keep that number down, it would be super duper helpful. I was thinking we got let's see, how many days do we have remaining in the month of July as far as broadcast days are concerned? We got 9 broadcast days left, and that would just, if we can actually finish the month okay, that will pay the bills that are outstanding and due right now and give me a fighting chance at getting down to see my surgeon for my 9-month follow-up and make sure everything is as it should be, and then we'll get started on August, and we'll just be looking at each other going, well, where the hell did the summer go? Because I'm already there. Where the hell did the summer go? But summers are like that. Winters aren't, but summers are. Right. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know that both streams are going out nicely. By the way, I did as I said I would do. I uploaded the shows that didn't go to White Bros Society last week, so they're all, everything is there, and everything should be back to normal. The White Rose stream is streaming merrily along, and again, profound and sincere thanks to Ben Birch for everything he had to do to get that back up and running. I know it was a giant pain in the tuchus. Thanks again to the, I presume prefers to remain anonymous individual, who did two heavy shows on me and helped us be able to have a fundraising goal as low as it is right now. Thank you so very much. I trust you know who you are. And if you don't, shoot me a note and I'll tell you. Well, only if you're... Never mind. I'm being facetious. Oh, hey! We're double moderating this evening. Brain doesn't have a chance. Because pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, has joined the conversation. Skeeve! And my God, even Asa is in there. We are just moderating all over the place. My goodness gracious sakes alive. So, it is Titanic Tuesday, and I've got my own ideas about what constitutes, Skeeve pointing out, 10,000 degrees in the Georgia mountains. Yeah, we've got air you can wear going on up here. I mean, it's thick, and not in a good way. Not in the modern positive usage of the word thick and misspelled thic. No, this is thick air. This is air you can wear. This is like, I don't know. It's like breathing with a wet sponge over your face. You kind of like being, I don't know, just walking around getting waterboarded. Let me do just this one thing here. Okay, so now our anonymous... Okay, very good. That's taken care of. Where to begin? Like I said, I have my ideas of where I would like the program to go, but y'all have your own as well. And apparently, and I don't want to be too presumptuous on this, but yeah, are you washing your melon today, Brother Deacon? It's funny, after all these years of right-wingers using Molon Labe, women are using it now. And, well, the Supreme Court of the United States said, okay, we will. And then we got Dobbs. I know. Oh God, they're all three moderators are sitting there waiting to punch Brain in the face. You know, metaphorically. It gives them something to do. I get the idea based on communications and the like that I've had over the course of the day. That there is some considerable angst over the story that was broken last night by Rachel Maddow regarding Attorney General Merrick Garland. Man of silly putty. I know it's bothering Ben Birch and Kevin in Massachusetts said, so Garland's just going to ride out, huh? With that, Joe Biden is the equivalent of the Shah of Iran in 1979 for the rest of his term, or Bonnie Sauter, or any of those presidents Iran turned out between 79 and 83, while the Ayatollah turned Iran inside out. It's hard not to adopt that note. Or that attitude. And what's at issue here? Just a second. Okay, let me try to, just to mess with her. Yeah, I know when my head's being messed with. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. All right. Good afternoon, Billable Rick. Brain, stop it. Robin, stop picking on Brain. He has feelings, too. On second thought, fuck Brain's feelings. I know. Just to sort of bring everybody else in on it, if you're not already. I guess we'll call it the Garland memo. And it got people all kinds of upset. And I guess the way that Rachel Maddow pitched it didn't help. But in an MSNBC exclusive, a Rachel Maddow exclusive, they got wind. MSNBC and Rachel did, of a memo that Merrick Garland signed 2 months ago, May. That said, any politically sensitive investigations in this midterm election year will have to be signed off on at the highest levels of the DOJ. Well, you know, thank God they got that bullshit prosecution of Andrew Gillum out there, or maybe they signed off on that. Maybe they gave the green light to that. Who knows? I think part of what might have upset folks was that was the title of the memo. Election year sensitivitize. And it says. It says that, the very tippy top of the Department of Justice will have to give their approval in order for prosecutions of criminal conduct to take place, like, between now and November. And to that extent, it's not exactly the first time that's happened. Among other things, Bradley Moss, a national security lawyer in D.C., said that it was very, very similar to previous guidances that had been issued by attorneys general in the past in election years, and tried to point out that it's not a new limitation on the DOJ, but more of a, hey, y'all, just remember, we got a bunch of filthy fucking criminals out there, but you're going to have to say, Mother, may I, if you ever want to bust any of them. And it felt like, because, of course, the goal is, we must not appear to be partisan. And what that means for a Democratic administration is that thou shalt not prosecute Republicans because they will cry loudly and long about how meanly they're being treated. The first thing I thought of when I read about it was the way that the Republicans in the Senate insulated Amy Coben, oh, I almost said her name, the handmaid, insulated the handmaid from any criticism of her participation in a really dodgy, skeevy, sleazy, nasty, spooky, creepy religious cult. Oh, you can't ask her about her religion. That'd be violating her First Amendment. Her right to choose religions. I see what I did there? Yeah. And that's been on my mind because I ran across a story over the weekend talking about the fact that back when she was a law professor at Notre Dame and was a member of a pro-life, we'll just call that a misogyny organization there in Talibandiana. Well, one of the organizations that she was a member of actually wound up getting, well, note taken of them because they had Dr. Bernard, the same doctor who provided the abortion to the 10-year-old recently, they had her on a kidnap list because apparently this oh-so-Christian organization that is pro-fetus and pro-forced birth had a kidnap list. And back when she was a law professor, the handmaid actually spoke fondly, endorsingly, of that organization. Might have been nice if we could have asked about that back then, but the FBI actually went to Dr. Bernard and said, listen, we have credible threats that people want to kidnap you because, you know, you provide reproductive health care that's perfectly legal to women at the clinic there at IU Health. Yeah, well, but, you know, the IOKIYAR, right? I mean, you wouldn't want people running around talking about how she pals around with kidnappers or anything, now would you? But it put the Garland thing kind of put me in mind of that. In the way that it's almost like it's a firewall against prosecution of Republicans who get caught red freaking handed. Flavio says, I missed Rachel's program last night. You better fill us in. I'm doing my best here. Flavio adding, otherwise I have more faith in the Fulton County, Georgia DA. There's tape, and she ain't playing. And she doesn't have to say, Mother, may I, to Merrick, man of silly putty, Garland. So this has been done in the past. The Attorney General, his memo writing, well, this is particularly important in an election year. Now that the 2022 election season is upon us, and as in prior election cycles, I'm so sleepy. I am issuing this memorandum to remind you of the department's existing policies with regard to political activities. Maddow pointing out last night, that new rule was established by Bill Barr when he was working for Donald Trump. Noting Merrick Garland has just formally extended that guidance and told every employee of the Justice Department that it's still in effect. And it's depressing. I mean, do you think that I'm more curious about the why they felt like it was necessary to issue it. Everybody knows it's an election year. It's a midterm election year. As Kim from New York points out, hi, Kim, the DOJ memo, we're not yet in a presidential election year, so wouldn't this policy only be relevant next year, at least for the purpose of indicting Trump? Well, you'd like to think so, but I wouldn't bet money on it. Because basically what this says is that if the January 6th commission, whose primetime hearing will be this Thursday, by the way, we'll get into that in a little bit perhaps, but if they find some hot and smoky stuff, and I think you can make the argument that they already have, then the entire Department of Justice structure is going to have to play Mother May I with Merrick Garland, which they already had to do in terms of any major major criminal charges that touched upon serious political implications. You know, page one, section one, statements, investigations, and charging near an election. And then there were some warnings about the Hatch Act. Election year sensitivities. If you want to see the entire MSNBC piece, it's up over at YouTube. And it's real easy to see something like this and kind of have a conniption. I'm at a loss to figure out why it is that something that Bill Barr did, a Republican attorney general, would be extended into into this term, because Bill Barr is not exactly somebody other attorneys general should be looking up to. But it is curious to wonder what will happen if the January 6th committee develops evidence in full to support the indictment of Donald Trump for his seditious conspiracy or incitement of sedition, things like that. And the memo doesn't do anything that prevents the indictment of Trump, technically. And Nitwit Nero, meanwhile, is playing will he or won't he with the American people. And what was it? Maybe last week I turned on my filthy morning habit. Donald Trump will probably announce his presidential run this week. Well, that was last week. Didn't happen. So now it's, well,
I think I'll make my announcement sometime in September.
And so he'll go on running his grift. Because that's what all of this is. And the bottom line is that there's a boatload of evidence against Donald Trump And it does give you a kind of a case of the queasies, thinking about whether this country remains a nation of laws and not of people, rests upon the whim of a not particularly vigorous attorney general. When we've watched the J6 hearings, and we know how broad and deep this runs. And we know that not just J6 is not where it all begins and ends. He was a criminal president all the way through. And if we really want to have a hissy, and I'm pro-hissy in this instance, if we really, really want to have a hissy, can we save some time for hissifying over the 1975 OLC guidance that still to this day says that a president who violates the law cannot, while in office, cannot be charged with violating that law? I mean, that really is a Bueller kind of moment. Because there's absolutely nothing out there to suggest that anybody, but the thing is, in going back to Kim in New York's observation, Trump is not president, so there is nothing barring a prosecution of his activities. You know, all along the theory of that 1975 OLC nonsense was that, well, you know, you could. Maybe you could charge him, but you couldn't prosecute him. You'd have to wait until he was out of office. And according to, you know, the thinking of some, that's a big motivating factor in him deciding to run. Thinking that if he can just win the White House, he can stay out of the big house for a while longer. Which I guess is true. But I don't think the memo actually changes anything. It doesn't mean Merrick Garland's going to be less vigorous, because I don't think the mathematics exists to describe Merrick Garland being less vigorous. From our today in sedition files, got one of those. The Charlotte Observer with a story pointing out that the longest sentence handed down so far in relation to the attack on constitutional governance on January the 6th and upon the Capitol thereof has been handed down as of this past Friday against James Malt of Fayetteville, North Carolina, and one of his co-defendants. The sentencing judge was Beryl Howell, who has shown herself to be not particularly sensitive to the MAGA claims of the insurrectionists. Now, this was a former soldier who was posted at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, who re-upped after January the 6th. And this past Friday, Beryl Howell got 44 months in the joint and 3 years of supervised release. Judge Beryl Howell remarking during the hearings for Malt and Cody Mattis of Greece, New York, said they were not patriots on January 6th. No one who broke police lines that day were. They were criminals. Malt, meanwhile, boo-hooing and snotting along, said, those police officers did not deserve what happened to them. As a soldier,
I should have known better.
But nonetheless, Malt, who did a four-year hitch in the Army, he was a combat engineer in Kuwait, re-upped this past May because he'd lost his job as an iron worker in New York. And, May of that year. He was arrested in October after people investigating the insurrection put him and his pal Mattis at two of the front lines of the Capitol attack. And in fact, he encouraged police officers to stop opposing them and join the putsch.
Your jobs will be here when you come back after we kick the shit out of everyone. This shit is fucking right. What we're doing is right, or there wouldn't be this many fucking people here, and you guys fucking know this shit.
And then, to use the language of the Charlotte Observer, they crowd surfed. Yeah. They crowd surfed their way to the top of the mob, to the mouth of the West Terrace tunnel of the Capitol leading into the building. And cameras caught them there using chemical spray on police, bear spray, that kind of thing. And they really hosed down one Capitol officer by the name of identified as M.A. And Malt and Mattis had been actively involved in planning exactly what they were going to do relative to the insurrection for days prior to the attack. So they were, to some extent, they were insiders. This past April, they pled to felony assault on police officers, and the judge was able to depart upwards because of the fact that they used chemical sprays on cops, and in return for their guilty plea, the feds, Merrick Garland's feds, dropped a bunch of other charges, or several other charges, that could have maybe kept them in prison for a decade or more. And, you know, it's disgusting. On Friday, Malt spoke to Judge Howell and said, "My friends and I went to the Capitol on January 6th with the best intentions. Our protest got terribly out of hand. I fell into the mob mentality, and I didn't think about what I was doing."
Except that he did think about what he was doing for days in advance of the insurrection.
The Charlotte Observer, keeping track, says that at least 23 people, 23 North Carolinians, have been charged in the insurrection. How very Confederate of them. And over 850 people have been arrested. That is way off the mark of the 12,000 or so who participated. And Judge Howell said that she wanted the sentences that she handed out to Malt and Mattis to be a warning to future malcontents disappointed with the outcome of an election, especially by directly participating in violence, as these two defendants did. 44 months. So that's 3 years and 8 months. And, of course, somewhere along the way, the prosecutors were given the leeway to plead away other charges that would have really served a warning.
And of course, there are complex things that go into a decision about whether to take a plea, that kind of thing. One of which is, do we have time for one? Does the court have enough docket time? Or will we be trying these guys when they're 80? Because I suspect that was one of the motivating factors in all this is, well, hell, if there's enough of us, they don't have the infrastructure to deal with all of us. And I think that's being shown to be true. Take the plea, get them out of the system. Because it's just another day for the Justice Department. This goes all the way back to the very beginning of this thing when we were sitting here in our little conversation saying, you know what we need? We need a special prosecutor for January 6th, whose brief will be to prosecute anyone and everyone who had anything to do with that nightmare day. Nah. Why, asks Ron in Raleigh. Several months ago, I stated that Merrick Garland is a card-carrying member of the Federalist Society. He's not made of silly putty. He's just doing what a member of the aforementioned outfit would do. Has a member of that group ever done a damn thing to move this country forward? He's dragging his feet because he is like he is. He is like his fellow travelers on the SCOTUS. Matt Gaetz has been under investigation for over a year. If that's not an open and shut case, I've never seen one. Merrick Garland and Alvin Bragg aren't going to do shit. Is Alvin Bragg Federalist Society too? The Manhattan DA? I don't know the answer to that. But it's hard to argue with Ron's position. Garland memo, Tom in sunny San Rafael says, So in other words, the DOJ will only enforce the law in odd-numbered years, unless, of course, there's a potential prosecution of a Democrat, gimmick infringement. We're all screwed, Robin. Signed Tom in warm and sunny, but not humid, San Rafael. Sure feels that way, but the thing is, it was going to be that way whether the memo was uncovered or not. Maybe pointing this memo out serves to a... God, what kind of... Oh, what kind of simple little Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm Pollyanna am I? I was going to say it might serve as some sort of pressure on the Biden administration to make sure that they take this shit, that the word gets over to Merrick to actually take this putsch, this terrorist attack on the Capitol, this coup against the government, as seriously as it deserves to be. And it also calls to mind what appears to be dynamic tension between the J6 committee and the DOJ, with the DOJ, give us everything you got. And the J6 committee saying, no, not yet. No, don't think so. And so now when the J6 committee wraps up its work, the DOJ can say, well, we asked you for everything. You didn't give it to us, so we don't have time to do anything. See ya. And that's not putting any kind of an onus on the committee. It just feels a little bit like a fix being in. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, lawlessness. If only one side follows the laws and norms while the other side is dismantling the pillars of democracy, then how long will it be until some desperate people take matters into their own hands? I mean, for the most part, us lefties are nonviolent folks. Yeah, we are. I mean, we have fully adopted, for the most part, internalized Dr. King's doctrines of nonviolent civil disobedience. But it only takes, Matt adds, one person or one group to feel so helpless and desperate that violence seems like an option. If that happens, then doesn't that just play into the right's characterization of the radical left, and then the race to the bottom's on in full force with guns blazing and a great crackdown to regain control of the country? With all the apathy I'm seeing out there, I'm having trouble visualizing things turning around before the worst-case scenario comes to pass. I'm just thankful that I have the means to purchase property in another country. We're going to get two adjoining lots. That way we can rent out one for passive income. Don't get me wrong. I'll work my ass off for our side to win. But being from a group that is usually the first to be eliminated, I'm not willing to die quite yet, so I need somewhere to flee if the time comes. Can't blame you. And I understand why you would want to do that. And the fact of the matter is, depending on how awful it gets, and there's indication that it's going to get terrible, especially within the LGBTQ plus community, then having an escape plan is profound. And make sure, you know, make sure those passports are up to date, and that they, you know, it might even be worth re-upping them right now during the Biden administration, so that you'll have a rock solid 5 or 10 years on it before you have to do it again. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, from my vantage point, this midterm is the election of our lives. I mean, the bills that are being filed just as a sort of a, well, it's an inspiration to the right, if you want to call it that. And it's a clanging warning bell to everybody else. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Message received. I ran across this one, and it gave me the horrors. Tom Cotton and some maggot clown from Indiana, who was not Mike Brown, have filed a bill in the Senate that would allow a 30-year statute of limitations for anyone who had gender surgery under the age of 18. Oh, no, not the trans stuff. Not already. Sorry. The bill goes on to declare that gender-affirming surgery is medical malpractice per se, and allows anyone who receives it, or received it under 18, 30 years to file a medical malpractice suit against the physician. Now, this is a bill that's been filed in the Senate of the United States. This would be, if it won't get a committee hearing right now, anytime soon, I don't think. But they'll be eager and waiting once the toxic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Machiavellio Meccanellio gets his hands on the gavel again. It's an astonishingly bad piece of legislation. Never really, it's kind of like never heard tell of such a thing. But there it is, and here we are. And that's just one out of many. So I get it. God, Matt, I so get it when you say, you know, being on the front lines of who they're coming after. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And but everybody, to one degree or another, is on the list. Let's check in with the Republican Party down in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan. You know, Toxic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Machiavellio's home state, even though he did slither out of Colbert County, Alabama. The Bracken County Republican Party. Decided to take up the issue of the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. Bracken County GOP Chair Karen Kirkendall. You can tell it had to be really an obnoxious post for her to come out and say, "Now, this does not represent the values of the Bracken County Republican Party. It was incredibly insensitive. We will investigate how this occurred, and we commit to tighter oversight of our social media going forward." Because what it boils down to is the post from the Bracken County Republican Party was about an individual by the name of Steve Dettelbach. Steve Dettelbach recently became the brand new director of the ATF-E. And the post referred to him being a part of the, wait for it, Jewish junta. Kentucky Jewish Council Rabbi Shlomo Litvin didn't feel too much inspired by the words of Chairwoman Kirkendall. He said, "It's an attempt to silence our community, and we will not be silenced. There's a line that's been making its way around social media: the Jews are tired. That was initially a large part of my response." Chair Kirkendall said was, "Earlier today, I was made aware of an inappropriate post on the Bracken County GOP Facebook page. That post does not represent the values of Bracken County Republican Party. Incredibly insensitive. We will investigate and tighter oversight," you know, like I mentioned earlier. And then, speaking to the Louisville Courier-Journal, Chairman Kirkendall, Karen, she'd like to see the manager, said, "Our page done got hacked, so we just deleted the whole Facebook page due to the harmful nature of the article." Hack my ass, please. Rabbi Litvin was having none of it. He said, "Regardless of where it came from, it was posted on their page. They now have a responsibility to stand with anyone who can read and say the idea that Jews are running the government is a fake anti-Semitic trope that has no basis in reality." Well, it's an anti-Semitic trope. I think the post and the assertion in it was quite real, Rabbi, because there's a shit ton of Republicans, and they all follow Donald Trump, and they think and they stand by it no matter what Karen Kirkendall has to say about it. And Rabbi Litvin is a little bit worn out with it. He said, "From the attempted assassination of a member of the Jewish community running for mayor in Louisville to cries of 'Jew them down in the state' to an op-ed in the Courier-Journal saying that the Jews are faking anti-Semitism, and now this, an accusation from a local Republican Party that Jews are running the government." And then Rabbi Litvin went all both sides. Oh, no, no, Rabbi, no. "We've seen plenty of groups here in Kentucky ready to condemn across the aisle. We need a lot more to say there's also issues on my side of the aisle for both parties to recognize there are issues within our parties, there are issues within our communities, and we need to speak out on them." Really? Really, Rabbi? You really went to the "there are very fine people on both sides"? You went there? Because I'm not aware of a whole bunch of left-wing Jew hate out there. I mean, I guess it's statistically possible there's some of it, but you know, if say one side has 99% and the other side has 1%, then it seems to me pretty clear where the vast majority of, you know, the fault lies. And, of course, it was posted to the Bracken County GOP page. It was from a person who makes anti-Semitic memes and tropes. This thing originated with a neo-Nazi activist by the name of Joseph Jordan, who goes by the nom de plume Eric Stryker. And a journalist named Nick Martin pointed out that Nick Stryker and his Nazi pals are bragging about the incident. There is one, count them, one Jewish member of the Kentucky State Legislature. Her name is Senator Karen Berg. She comes from Louisville. Interviewed by the Cincinnati Inquirer, she said, well, there are dangerous repercussions for our society in as far as someone in a GOP county executive committee felt emboldened enough to post this on social media. It is a sign of a rise in extremism and hatred. And said, I'm so tired of this. Welcome to the fight, Senator. But that's that's the fight we're in these days. Going back to the Garland memo, Billable Rick with some input, and I appreciate it, Billable. The Garland memo, in my view, it requires pre-approval by the AG of a politically sensitive criminal investigation during an election season, does not appear to be a major departure from past DOJ practice. That's the whole point. While I was an assistant USA from 91 to 2011, I remember that DOJ had a policy to not indict a politician running for elective office during the 90-day period preceding a primary or general election. I believe that such policy remains the same, although an investigation considerably differs from an indictment. Since only the latter is generally public known information, the Garland memo doesn't prohibit the commencement or continuation of a politically sensitive criminal investigation during an election season. Pay attention, y'all. It only requires that the AG approve such an investigation. In criminal cases, it's not uncommon to require AG approval of certain actions, such as search warrant applications for attorneys' offices. The purpose of that requirement is to prevent an ill-considered government action from making it into the funny papers. So to paraphrase Scotty, we may not be all screwed as regards a criminal investigation of Trump. You know, that investigation may be taking place. I will now be called probably Pollyanna and or Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farms for thinking that it might be. And Randy Radar pointing out, a lot of Republican Jewish professionals have no idea what the conservative Christians have in store for them. No, and if and the problem is if you tell them, even if you tell them, there's a bunch won't believe you. You can lay out chapter and verse. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. Oh, wait. Well, thank you for that. Scary Jerry with a note. Hissifying? My girl R over there minting words. Also heard Silent R. Lamar yesterday again. Classic. If you view Silent R through the lens of being our own Samuel L. Jackson and dopamine-liberated Scorpio, it all makes sense. Scorpios are really, really, really reserved and demure until even we get some molecules in them. Then, ha! Also, laughing ass off, it is difficult to have any Reagan conversations and not have any conversations devolve into unintended, unwarranted, and uninvited forcible rear gastro entry. Futt-bucking seems to be an obsession with late-stage boomers. I remember the references from sales rooms in the 1990s. It was rear guard this and rear intrusion that, so I get it. I heard a joke from a trans person that I think will put proper pink bow on this. The only problem with a... Oh, dear God. With a dick in the ass is that it's usually attached to a man. I've overcome those limitations. Oh, dear God. I was going for something a little bit more wholesome. Like, how many trans girls does it take to change a light bulb? Only one. And you don't even need the light bulb. Just tell her she's a pretty girl and she'll light the room up around her. Ah, I just thought that was sweet and wholesome. No, says Jeremy, we'll just call you Robin of Sunnybrook Farms. You had to use another name not of your choice for far too long, my friend. Well, thank you. It's sweet. So, like I said, we've got a fundraising goal this evening. It remains at zero. It is $570. If we would knock down 270 of it, yesterday would be fully funded. And that would be wonderful. I can't imagine what it would be like to be fully caught up at this time of the month. So, we'll have to wait and see. But the PayPal button's over at headon.live. If you want to be a Patreon subscriber, that link is in the contribute tab, and it would be mighty helpful. And remember, $10 subscribers, five of them this month, get their first month's subscriptions doubled, so your 10 becomes 20, and that's via our buddy Zed.
Zed, we have a bug.
I just love that line from the first... Well, first Men in Black movie is one of my favorite. It's a gift that keeps on giving. Oh, Mikey. Yeah. But it would be great to get those five new subscribers this month. Pretty please. Conservative Jewish, Lee in New York, says that Trump moved the embassy to Jerusalem. And Democrats want Israel to treat Palestinians like people. I know. Okay, how about this, Ron and Raleigh says. I'll believe it when I fucking see it. Talking the talk is a lot easier than walking the walk. It is. We don't know what kind of walking's going on inside the building, and we are left to pray uncomfortably that there's any walking going on, you know, at all. Okay, top of the hour, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin. No, long time no see. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia.
Well, goodness gracious. You know, it's interesting that I was thinking about you, Reggie. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm doing just fine, man.
Good.
Why are these people, you know, first of all, they go after AOC's ass for mocking Brett Kavanaugh because he couldn't have his souffle at Morton Steakhouse in New York. You know, you heard that story, right, Robin?
Yeah, sure.
And then just this past week, you got some wannabe stand-up comedian, white guy, checking out her own ass when she was going to work, you know.
Yeah, we talked about that right-wing ass hat.
Yeah, did you talk about him last week or this past week? I mean, yesterday.
Friday. I'm pretty sure it was Friday.
Oh, good. I'll check that out. You know, she wanted to bitch slap him, but no, she didn't do that. But, and she said that those asshole cops or security guards didn't protect her one bit, not one single bit. he needs protection, man, because I'm afraid something might or is going to happen to him.
I think any Democrat who speaks out and pushes back immediately puts themselves at risk of grievous bodily harm, because it's not the propensity to violence is not evenly distributed across the political spectrum. Right. They're the ones with all the guns, and they're the ones who sit around masturbating and fantasizing about hurting people.
Right, but something has to be done before something like that happens, Robin. I don't want anybody to get hurt like that, especially her or Nancy Pelosi, or any of them, in fact. You know what I'm saying, Robin?
Well, I do. I'm decidedly anti-violence.
Right. I mean, why is it okay for them to go after her, but not Brett Kavanaugh, who I just stated earlier, couldn't eat his souffle at Morton Steakhouse in New York? You know, that he was, you know, that they were, shall we say, violating his civil rights to eat at a restaurant with his family or by himself alone.
Well, the Morton's incident with Brett Kavanaugh took place in D.C., I do believe.
Oh, well, D.C. Well, anyway, yeah. But anyway, why is it okay for them to harass her but not him? I mean, she says she gets it all the time, and this obsession they have with her, she doesn't get or quite understand it. Do you, Robin? Go ahead, Robin.
No, it's look. You have to understand it, Reggie, as a function of the right wing preoccupation with women who dare to be in politics and be attractive at the same time. They are hopeless. They have hopeless political masturbatory fantasies over her. And you know, the fact of the matter is, they probably do the same over Lauren Bobblehead Boebert and marginal trailer queen.
Right.
But she's on their side, so they don't have any... So the homicidal fantasy aspect of it isn't there.
Right. Well, right. What about these other, you know, what about these other loons? What about Betsy DeVos? Do they fantasize over and about her?
No, I
didn't think so.
But do you not remember how every Republican man in America spooged when Sarah Palin winked in 2008? Because I did.
Yes, I saw that. I think she was doing a speech when she winked at the camera.
Yeah.
And the internet caught it. Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah.
I saw that. Did they do the same thing to melanoma, as you like to call her?
Yeah, oh yeah. They were all hot and bothered for melanoma.
But AOC doesn't want these guys. She has a boyfriend. What would she want with
it's not even that. She has the same right that any woman has to go and to go to and return from work without being harassed by a bunch of catcalling jerks and misogynists.
But those guys weren't doing their job to protect her. You know. What if he done it to Nancy Pelosi or somebody else?
Well, it would have been free speech. You let the stupid fucker do what he's going to do, because if you do anything about it, then you just amplify his ugliness.
Right. Well, those guys said that he wasn't doing anything physical. They can't arrest him for verbal, shall we say, assault. What say you about that, Robin? They can't arrest them for verbal assault.
Well, assault is assault. I mean, it's on federal grounds. It would have to meet the elements of assault that's in the federal code.
Right.
And apparently, given the fact that she was ready to go over and whip some ass, she doesn't appear to have been put in fear of receiving an imminent, unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. The guy was just running his mouth.
Right. But she would have been blasted for it. She would have been blasted and backlashed for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going after her already. I mean, like, this young lady can never, ever catch or get a break. You know what I'm saying, Robin?
Yeah.
She can never ever catch or get a break. I don't get it.
Well, she's...
I don't get it.
She's all grown up. She knows what she's doing. She's serving, right. She's serving as an agent provocateur against the right. She's a lightning rod.
Right.
I'm not justifying the assholery, but no, she wants to demonstrate what it looks like to take the fight to the fuckers.
Right.
And that comes with, that does come with its own set of problems.
Yeah, right. But if it happened to them, they'll cry bloody ass fucking murder, won't they, Robin? If it happened to them.
Sure. Well, I mean, look, you started out with Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, exactly.
They were fit to have a baby over that.
Right.
And so was Morton's of Chicago as a standalone restaurant. The sacred right to have Din Din was violated for one of our Supreme Court justices.
What do you think about that, Robin? Do you think that's laughable?
I think what Pete Buttigieg said was absolutely correct.
What?
When he was asked about it on Fox News Sunday in the week following. I mean, this is old news now. We try to stay current here, but he said, "Look, if you're in this line of work, you better be tough enough to handle some damn criticism." And people protesting outside on the sidewalk is, well, you know, toughen up, Buttercup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they got to have thick armadillo turtle like hide or armor. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, gator hide.
Gator hide, yeah, gator hide. But they don't, and they're the ones that call us the snowflakes. But who are the true snowflakes? Us or them? I think it's them. Don't you, Robin?
I think you're absolutely right, Reggie. I do. Have you been? How have you been? It's been so very long. I mean, I really worried about you. Are you what all's been going on?
Well, it just stopped raining, and it's still hot because it's July.
Because, I mean, how long has it been since you called?
Months.
Yeah.
Months. You know, like I said, it stopped. It was raining a while. It was raining and thundering here a while ago, but it passed.
No, it's been a rainy summer.
Yeah, and it's still hot outside because it's still July.
And you're still in Georgia.
Yeah.
So I got to know, are you gonna get out there and knock on doors and do what you can for Reverend Warnock?
I don't know.
I understand.
But anything's better than Herschel Walker. What's he doing running for anything? What do you say about that, Robin?
He's dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. And yet, depending on which poll you're looking at, he's neck and neck with Senator Warnock.
Yeah, but you can't let illiterate people run for anything. What I mean?
That's the problem. As long as you got the filing fee, you can run for anything you want to run for.
I just hope they don't elect them. And if they do, they're the stupid ones, not us. I hope they don't elect them. Because, this guy is no politician.
But that's what Republicans like about him, Reggie. He's not a politician.
They like morons, idiotic morons. Is that what they like?
They like people who will do their bidding. Plain and simple.
You mean slaves or puppets? God, I hate to say that word, but
I do too.
But they like puppets, right?
Sure.
And they're masters of the puppeteers, right?
They are the puppeteers.
Yeah, they're masters are. They're the puppets. They might as well be dogs because, that's what they act like to their masters or owners. Right, Robin? I just hope that nothing else happens to where AOC or anybody else at her job or their job, And tell Brett Kavanaugh to stop crying like a little bitch. I mean, you know, tell him to stop crying.
But he's,
you know,
but I mean, that's who Brett Kavanaugh is. He pisses and moans and cries and whines whenever he has to face any of the consequences of his toxic, misogynistic actions. I mean, that's what his Senate confirmation hearing was all about, Reggie.
So he doesn't like it when the shoe's on the other foot.
Oh no, right? no, because he is, as you said, a special snowflake.
Yeah, he is a special snowflake. But what about that guy that protested outside his house? Or was that somebody else's house that guy protested at? You know, do I have the wrong story?
No, I think you do. I think you do. Well, Reggie, it is good to hear from you, my friend. I hope everything continues to go well for you, and we'll catch you soon, okay?
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say this. Well, did he bitch and complain about that? Did he cry, whine, and moan about that? That guy who was not a threat to anyone, who just protesting for his beliefs and his rights and his principles outside his house?
Well, there was one guy who called in and said, you know, I think I want to hurt Brett Kavanaugh, and they sent police over and picked him up right away. And he was a desperate menace. And of course, if you protest outside Morton's, you're a desperate menace.
Right.
But you know, if you're the Proud Boys and you or whatever, and you try to overturn the government, or you're the Patriot Front, and you try to go, you make plans to go to a pride parade. Well, you get $300 right. bail and probably never have to pay much in the way of a fine. Certainly don't do any jail
right.
time.
Right. Well, would they do the same thing if they protested outside AOC? Huh? Hello?
Yeah, what?
Oh. I said, do you think they'll do the same thing if they protested outside AOC's house?
Oh, well, over on Fox News and the like, they'd say that those people needed a medal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right. But that's not right or fair.
No, it isn't, but it's okay if you're a Republican. That's the basic rule.
That's true. That is very true, Robin. That's very true.
All right, Reggie, you have yourself a good evening. You stay cool now. Stay out of the rain.
You do too, Robin, and I'll call you back tomorrow.
All right. See ya. Bye now.
All right.
Been a long time since I heard from Reggie. I'm glad to know he's okay. And so as we move into the second hour of the program, some breaking news. Kind of a big deal. The House of Representatives actually passed a bill just a little bit ago that recognizes same-sex marriages, because the Democrats in the House recognize that, well, they take Clarence Thomas seriously when Slappy says that he wants to get rid of Obergefell versus Hodges. So the House did the right thing and passed a bill to make same-sex marriage statutory law of the land, not just decisional law of the land. It will now go to the Senate of the United States and sit in a pool of blood and dust on Mitch McConnell's desk and expire. And then we will, of course, blame Nancy Pelosi for it. I mean, that's usually the way this works. As to the Georgia race, Lee in New York says, I think Stacey Abrams needs help more than Reverend Warnock does. Yeah, she does. She does. And Brian Kemp, who got into the office by engaging in massive voter suppression the first time through, well, he's governor now. He did that as Secretary of State. God, I'd love to see her win. I would. And Stephen New York writes and says, Reverend Jabba the Hagee, starve! Remember Reverend Hagee and his outfit, Queefy? Citizens United for Israel. I remember telling a Jewish friend of mine about Reverend Hagee and the whole Christian Zionist movement. I put it this way, they're not your friends. Her response, well, he's pro-Israel now. I don't know. Maybe it's a conversation to have somewhere down the road. I don't know. I don't know how anybody else feels like feels about being somebody's fetish, but I don't like it. I've actually, in the last couple of years, especially in the last year, been thoroughly fetishized on social media and other places. I've shared the gross emails.
I'm straight, but you're hot.
Well, see, but trans women get fetishized. Even rather anodyne trans women like me. And it feels really gross. But maybe it just seems so far distant, the possibility of... Maybe it's an intellectual approach, Steve. They realize that Jesus ain't coming back, and especially not anytime soon. So, you know, as long as Queefy's money spends, there we go. Well, he's pro-Israel now. I've actually heard that, too. That's just, yeah. Jeremy in Vermont says, fetishized, you took the words out of my mouth. Oh, the emails. And the private messages. Steve pointing out, another Trump acolyte who received advice from Bannon et al. Story from The Guardian. Bolsonaro's attack on Brazil's electoral system sparks outrage. Moves to question integrity of voting system come amid poor polling for far-right leader facing October election. Electoral officials and senior politicians have criticized the Brazilian president, Jair Bolsonaro, Flavia, after the far-right leader called foreign diplomats to the presidential palace and made unfounded allegations about the integrity of the upcoming election.
You know, I wonder when he talks, when he speaks his Brazilian Portuguese, I wonder if he sounds like this.
Probably not. Bolsonaro told them the electronic voting system in Brazil, which has been used without controversy since 1996, was vulnerable. The remarks raised concerns that the populist politician facing poor polling results may attempt to discredit the democratic process if he loses in October. And Brazil's Supreme Electoral Court immediately refuted his claims with a list of 20 rebuttals. Now, the president of the court, Edson Fachin, described it as unacceptable electoral denialism. It's time to say enough of this disinformation. It's also time to say no to authoritarian populism. And, of course, the neat thing about being an authoritarian populist...
He opposes me. He opposes making Brazil great again.
And that's how that works. But yeah, he was a client of some of the dirty little stooges who gave information to, and may still be, to Nitwit Nero. Thanks for that, Steve. And then this, because you know we talk about. Court stuff and court proceedings and judicial processes and things from time to time. This one, well, I read this one and it was like, hey, at least it's not in West Virginia. For this, we go to the Second Judicial Circuit of Texas, where a trial was going on, and attorney Lauren Varnado said she was subjected to nonstop abuse during the trial. Now, I'm not particularly inclined to be supportive of attorney Lauren Varnado because her client was a natural gas producer by the name of EQT. I'm generally in favor of the plaintiffs on those things because, well, I know how natural gas producers operate. They will sell 64 30 seconds of a working interest in a well. I've seen that stuff. But presiding over the case was Second Judicial Circuit Judge David W. Hummel, Jr. And smack dab in the middle of the trial, Second Judicial Circuit Judge David W. Hummel, Jr., hauled out his freedom protector in open court and proceeded to scream at Lauren Varnado in front of the entire courtroom on a number of occasions throughout the trial, and then with the jury still in the box, continued to scream at her after cross-examining a witness. She said she had been threatened, hired outside security of her own to protect her. And that got Varnado pissed, or that got Hummel pissed off. Hummel J. He claimed that he didn't know they were security until, I guess, the day before, and was basically like, how am I just now finding this out? Why would you have security? That's when, aren't my guns security enough? I mean, he walked around all the time with his robe open. I saw his gun. And then he pulled the gun out and deliberately pointed it at her when he placed it in front of him. And when she reported it to the FBI said, oh, it's safe to go back to court. And then the parties settled up and decided that they didn't want to go any further into the trial and somebody would write a check. Lauren Varnado said he treats counsel who appear before him with contempt, disdain, and disrespect, period. And what makes me want to think that he reserves most of that disdain and contempt and disrespect for lawyers who happen to be women. Who does he think he is? Judge Roy Bean, law west of the Pecos? Has he got a portrait of the Jersey Lily Langtree, hanging in his chambers? Forget it, Robin. It's Texas.
See, they know how to do justice down in Texas. They do. That's why the judge brings his freedom protector right there to court in case there's any trouble.
But speaking of lawyers, this is kind of a nice little moment. By nice little moment, I mean Schadenfreude. Jody Heiss is a member of the House of Representatives from Georgistan. He's a maggot. And he has received a little subpoena from the Fulton County District Attorney in her investigation there. Oh, by the way, Lindsay, Lady G, who recently has been, I will never, ever, ever answer a subpoena in that fishing expedition there in Fulton County, Georgia, in Atlanta. I will never do it. Never. Has now said, oh, yeah, I'm actually going to go. I guess even the South Carolina bar doesn't look well on blowing off subpoenas, so. Yeah, he's going to testify before the grand jury, Lady G is. Pick a stunning frock, Lady G. Maybe it'll influence the grand jury. Jody Heiss is making the argument, and makes my little noggin hurt just to think about it, Jody Heiss is making the argument that the Fulton County District Attorney's grand jury investigation of attempts to manipulate the vote count by the maggots well, Jody Heiss is saying that it needs to be removed from Fulton County, Georgia, and the grand jury hearing it needs to be in federal court. Kind of made my eyes roll back in my head, being as how a federal grand jury doesn't have jurisdiction to hear about allegations of violations of state election statutes. I mean, we're in Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice territory. In no way, shape, form, or fashion does the federal court have, does a federal grand jury have any business hearing about election law violations of the law of the state of Georgia. Enough to make a feller want to grow antlers. Do it for baby dog. Never mind. But no, that's what Jody Heiss is arguing. And I guess you get to put forward just any cockamamie notion that you want if you're a maggot trying to stay out of the pokey. But nonetheless, it kind of makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits and put onions in your socks and drink a mason jar of pee-pee. Well, along the way, a former Homeland Security Department Chief of Staff, Miles Taylor, in the course of the discussion of Jody Heiss's subpoena, and by the way, Jody Heiss is a states' rights Republican, states' rights. We all know what that means. Miles Taylor said, the first thing you pointed out has to be underscored is the massive conflicts of interest here that we didn't necessarily note about when Congress was trying to create a first version of the 9/11 Commission, model something around January 6th. It was like the 9/11 Commission, and then subsequently trying to get Republicans to agree to the Select Committee. At that time, a lot of folks thought it was just partisan politics, but we're starting to find out that there's a whole array of targets of potential criminal investigations, sitting members of Congress who were very involved in this saying, no, 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 we don't want this scrutiny. That's what's really very terrifying about this, Miles Taylor said. They're trying to use their official power to put their thumb on the scales to prevent themselves from getting in trouble. And then said, these members of Congress aren't people who can say, well, I didn't know the law and didn't know how it worked. Not that that's a good defense, as the lawyers tell me. But these are people who lived with that cycle. They lived that process. They go through the electoral process. They absolutely knew better. Talking to Nicole Wallace, she said, if we were making jokes about this, somewhere in here it would be a public service announcement for people who are around Donald Trump. The PSA would be, y'all need to go get yourself a good criminal defense attorney because they're starting to go into the network. These prosecutors are starting to go around the people around Donald Trump, and it'll have big implications. Allies like Jody Heiss, they're getting dragged into courtrooms in front of prosecutors. It's an indicator not that they potentially were involved in bad things, but that the ex-president is going to be dealing with a much diminished set of loyalists if he decides to make a comeback in this political system. Y'all need to get a good lawyer. Y'all need to go get yourself a good lawyer. Bueller? God, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Jody Heiss. Well, thank you. Thank you, Steve. I can always count on you. Yes, what a stunning frock that is. Are doorways wide enough now to get through with hoop skirts? I'm asking for a South Carolina senator, that's all. Golly Moses. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Thank you.
Ralph's has jumped in with a $10 matching challenge just to get us going this evening. That'd get us down to $550 in the fundraising goal. Thank you, Ralph's. I'm kicking in $10, and I'll add 10 more if somebody else contributes 10. So, actually, the 10's there. If Ralph's hears about another 10, she's going to add 10 to it. So that'll actually get us down to 540. And that would be super duper helpful. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you being there so often. Thank you so much. You know, don't do this for me. Respect how much that Ralphs does, and put that 10 in alongside her. Her contribution to get us off the goose egg schneid. Thank you. Well, we're at the halfway mark of the program. The lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation. You're mighty welcome to. It is a Tuesday, this 19th day of July, so what the heck? Let's check in with Brad and Desi and see what they're up to.
It's Tuesday, July 19, 2022.
What we're seeing here indeed is an example of reaping what we've sown.
Simultaneous record deadly heat waves strike across the globe. Last month tied for the hottest June ever recorded globally. Plus,
people like Manchin are intentionally sabotaging the president's agenda, what the American people want, what a majority of us in the Democratic caucus want.
Senator Joe Manchin again tanks Biden's climate and clean energy agenda.
Tanks for nothing. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You have this kind of heat over major populations, you get a big draw on that electric demand, and it looks like we may have just switched over to generator power. Our lights just went out.
That's right. The lights went out in the middle of the weather forecast warning about power outages on Houston's KTRK. It happened twice.
It did it again?
This is your Green News Report.
Is the AC on, Melanie? That's the important thing right there.
Okay, Desi Doyen, it's hard to not see this as exactly what you and so many climate scientists have been warning about so long, as the globe is pretty much just melting down this week.
It sure does seem like it. A persistent, intense, scorching heat wave continues to broil the Northern Hemisphere with historic new high temperature records across Europe, Asia, and the United States. In China, a billion people are suffering under extended record extreme heat and humidity, which is forecast to last through at least mid-August. Portugal hit a new all-time national record high of 117 degrees. In Spain and Portugal, the blistering heat has killed more than 1,000 people. In France, more than 15,000 have been evacuated from raging wildfires. In Italy, heat and drought have decimated a third of rice and corn crops. The UK issued its first ever national heat emergency, with flights and rail service curtailed due to buckling rails and runways. The heat is straining the capacity of emergency services to respond, and the death and disruption are a clear signal that society is not ready for today's climate impact, much less even worse heat events to come as the planet warms.
So it's going really well.
A new study projects that heat-related deaths will triple over coming decades unless governments accelerate climate action. And on top of all that, NASA just announced that June 2022 tied with June 2020 for the hottest June on record globally since record-keeping began in the 1880s, which is extra disturbing because we are currently in a cooling La Nina phase in the Pacific Ocean, which normally cools global temperatures.
So if we were in the middle of El Nino, Nino instead, these hot temperatures would be that much hotter.
And an El Nino is coming.
Oh, great.
The unforgiving heat everywhere has laid bare how challenging extreme temperatures will increasingly be in everyday life as man-made global warming increases the frequency, intensity, and duration of these extreme events. Today's extremes were accurately predicted by climate scientists for decades, according to Dr. Michael Mann on CNN.
The impacts of climate change aren't subtle anymore. We're seeing them play out in real time in the form of these unprecedented extreme weather disasters. But what the models do tell us is that if we reduce our carbon emissions to zero, the planet will stop warming up. And when the planet stops warming up, then these other impacts tend to stabilize.
Well, that's a pretty big if, Dr. Mann.
Against that backdrop of weather disasters, Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, a millionaire coal baron, has again quashed President Biden's climate and clean energy agenda, this time saying he wants to wait until the economy improves. Even though numerous independent economic analyses confirm that Biden's climate legislation would actually reduce inflation while also preparing the nation for climate impacts that are already costing the U.S. hundreds of billions of dollars a year in damages. Biden said in response he will use every authority as president to enact climate policy through the executive branch, but that approach is vulnerable to legal challenges and the whims of future presidents. Manchin receives more campaign donations from the oil and gas industry than any other politician. In an interview with ABC, independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont excoriated Manchin.
This is an existential threat to humanity. And what this election must be about is whether or not we're going to vote for candidates who are prepared to stand up for working people, stand up for the planet, and have the courage to take on the billionaire class.
Unless more Democrats are elected to the U.S. Senate in November, Manchin sabotage means the U.S. will be unlikely to meet its Paris Climate Agreement targets, and China's state-subsidized industries will have free rein to further dominate the global clean energy sector.
Manchin will never support anything that lowers carbon emissions because it also lowers the amount of money in his pocket. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And the money kept rolling in from every side.
Well, how about that? A new Joe of the Manchin Born theme song. Kind of like that. Stop that. Didn't want it to play again. Another follow-up with, what was his name? The maggot attorney general of Taliban, Indiana, Todd Rokita. He's about to find out just how angry a certain doctor in Talibandiana, whom he has repeatedly slimed, can get. Dr. Caitlin Bernard, again, who was on a kidnapping list for a fetus fetish organization that was supported by The Handmaid. Yeah, that's a thing. Dr. Bernard did the abortion on the 10-year-old who was raped when she had to and had to flee Ohio to even get the procedure. And Todd Rokita, again, slimed her, Dr. Bernard, repeatedly. And accused her, among other things, of not following the paperwork requirements for the procedure, which was, of course, a dirty, filthy lie. Well, Dr. Bernard has taken the first steps to deal with Todd Rokita. Remember, he had said,
Now, we have this abortion activist acting as a doctor with a history of failing to report. We're gathering the evidence as we speak, and we're going to fight this to the end, including looking at her licensure. If she failed to report it in Indiana, it's a crime for her not to report, to intentionally not report.
A doctor with an activist acting as a doctor. That's essentially, that is slander in the saying and libel in the publishing. Acting as a doctor implies that she's not a doctor. Dr. Caitlin Bernard is very, very much a damn sure doctor. So Dr. Bernard has made a filing. She has filed a Tort Claims Act against the state of Talibandiana. It was filed today. Mr. Rokita either knew the statements were false or acted with reckless disregard of the truth or falsity of the statements. Given the current political atmosphere in the United States, Mr. Rokita's comments were intended to heighten public condemnation of Dr. Bernard, who legally provided legitimate medical care. Now, a Tort Claims Act claim doesn't have an ad damnum clause. It doesn't seek a specific amount of money, but notes that she, Dr. Bernard, incurred security costs, legal fees, reputational harm, emotional distress. And Todd Rokita now has either 90 days to investigate or settle. And after those 90 days are up, Dr. Caitlin Bernard can sue the Attorney General of the state of Talibandiana. And once again, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Calls to the Talibandiana Attorney General's office have not been returned. And one can imagine Todd Rokita sitting in his Attorney General in office going, shit. You mean the law applies to me too? Yeah. Ah. Well, thank you. Jeremy says, you're off the hump. The extra 10 challenge was taken and beaten by me. So that means we are now down to 540. And thank you very kindly to Kevin. Thank you, Kevin. We are now down to 515 on the way to catching up with where we need to be. Thank you so much, Kevin. Thank you, Jeremy. And thank you, Ralphs. Abortion doctor Matt in San Francisco says, let's get this woman the Medal of Freedom post-haste. God, I agree. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Maybe Joe Biden could give her the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I mean, Jesus, if you can give one to Lee Greenwood. I mean, she's actually defending freedom, Dr. Bernard is. And it being Titanic Tuesday, this, via ProPublica, doing some of the best investigative journalism in the country today, when ProPublica hits publish, you can pretty much go to the bank with it. A story coming out of Arizona, Stan. Sorry, Suman. A man has filed a lawsuit in Arizona, Stan. And that lawsuit, this is just bizarre to me. An actual sitting judge allowed this lawsuit to go forward. The facts surrounding it are that four years after a woman ended a pregnancy just by taking the abortion pill, What is it? RU486? Is that the name of it? Well, she got it at a Phoenix reproductive health clinic. It was properly dispensed, duly prescribed. These damn things need to be over the counter. They shouldn't require a prescription. But nonetheless, a judge in Arizona. Now, bear in mind, okay, we gotta deal with some facts here. The use of the abortion pill is limited. You know, you can't use the abortion pill at 27 weeks. The abortion pill is usually available fairly early in the pregnancy. So the woman who took the abortion pill years ago, again, with a prescription, under physician supervision, duly subscribed and administered, legally subscribed and administered, prescribed and administered. Well, the father of the little wad of tissue went into court, kid you not, and asked the court for permission to establish, and anybody who has anybody who's even had a cup of coffee in law school understands how, and people who haven't, how absolutely sprayed roach crazy this is. The judge let him file an estate for the little wad of tissue. This was a 7-week pregnancy. I mean, at 7 weeks, it wasn't even a sea monkey. And it certainly wasn't a human life. And it damn sure required the permission and the tolerance or the acquiescence to continue going on and living in the womb. So first, this fetus fetish, imagine what kind of a daddy this asshole would have been, files an estate. And then he files, I'm not kidding, a wrongful death lawsuit against the clinic and the doctors therein. He filed it back in 2020. Claiming that the doctors somehow screwed up the informed consent aspect of the process. And, of course, being prescribed, it's an informed consent procedure. Look for this to continue. Law professors and the like, and people who sit around thinking about Knotty, K-N-O-T-T-Y, legal problems say that we can expect more of this. Wrongful death for a 7-week-old wad of tissue. And the case is still pending. The case has not been laughed out of court. The ProPublica article cites Sivia Tamarkin. She's president of the National Council of Jewish Women Arizona. And they're a reproductive rights advocacy organization. She said, it's a lawsuit that appears to be a trial balloon to see how far the attorney and the plaintiff can push the limits of the law, the limits of reason, the limits of science and of medicine. And the facts are not much in dispute. the ex-husband, Mario Villegas, was at the time married to the pregnant woman, and he took her to three medical appointments, a consultation, the abortion itself, and the follow-up. She has been deposed in this lawsuit. Some wackadoodle fetus fetish judge did not bounce this thing on a Rule 12B motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. According to her deposition, they were already talking about divorce when this happened. And they went on and got divorced. She said, we were not happy together at all. Well, Mr. Villegas is a former Marine. And he was a two-time loser when he married his third wife. And she said that, and this is one of those coded words, her relationship with Villegas was unstable. On the forms that she filled out, she checked a box that said, I am comfortable with my decision to terminate this pregnancy. And then, that was 2018, a year later, Villegas learns about a guy in Talabama. You see how bad ideas spread? Who sued the Alabama Women's Center for Reproductive Alternatives in Huntsville on behalf of a wad of tissue that was aborted at 6 weeks. And so Villegas is following the same thing that this one creep, Ryan Majors, M-A-G-E-R-S, did, and that is you file the estate of the decedent. Of course, how a decedent, well, a decedent has to have been a human being. A sea monkey is not a human being. If the then Mrs. Villegas had spontaneously aborted, she might not have even known she was pregnant. It might have been a bad period. But when you once you've established the estate, you can then sue as the personal representative of the decedent's estate. And that's what Ryan Majors did in Alabama. And the Alabama lawyer for Majors, who I'm sure is a fetus fetishist, or at the very least an ambulance chaser, cited a bunch of Alabama case law about, like, women who've been injured in car wrecks and lost a pregnancy. So the probate judge appointed Majors the representative of the estate. The same thing happened with Villegas. I mean, this is some breathtakingly stupid shit. Eventually, a circuit court in Alabama, a judge there, actually had an outbreak of brames and dismissed the suit. But this is the paragraph that kind of just crawled all over me because, you know, Republicans, maggots, whatever, are all about, you can't decide what your gender's going to be. There ain't but two sexes. In court filings, Villegas says he prefers to think of baby Villegas as a girl, although the sex of the embryo was never determined, and his lawyer argued that there isn't an Arizona case that explicitly defines a deceased person, so the issue appears to be an open one in Arizona. Well, in You know, in prior years, there probably didn't need to be a statue that defined deceased person, because you have person and you have deceased, and pretty cut and dried. But not now. Not in the era of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-venal, homosexual, Christian, Republican, fetus, fetish, misogynist, dead person. I don't know. Could wind up being a woman's toenail clippings. And giant of the law, the man living greatly in the law, as that coke addict Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. once put it, is a superior court judge by the name of Brian B. Chambers. Chambers said in Chambers, that could get confusing for a journalist, that by denying the motion to dismiss, he wanted Viegas to be able to make the argument that the embryo is a person in a wrongful death lawsuit. And then went on and appointed Viegas the personal representative of the sea monkey. Look for this shit to spread. And, because the National Right to Life Committee, it should be changed to the National Misogyny Committee, is deeply invested in promoting lawsuits that will define a bad period as a person. June the 15th, in a letter to its state affiliates, the National Misogyny Committee said, in addition to criminal penalties and medical license revocation, civil remedies will be critical to ensure that unborn lives are protected from illegal abortions. And James Bopp Jr., I'll never listen to Bopp again the same way. Hopefully I got all that out of my system anyway. James Bopp Jr., says, radical Democrat prosecutors have said they won't enforce criminal abortion bans. The civil remedies follow what the criminal law makes unlawful, and that's what we're doing. I'm so old I can remember when Republicans used to holler about things like tort reform and have fits over frivolous lawsuits. And honest to God, the funny thing is, I don't know if there's anybody on, you know, when with these estate cases, until they sue somebody, there's no adversarial proceeding. There's nobody to speak up and say, well, this is dumber than the head and the hog is in the ass. But I'd love to see some lawyers out there with you know, some righteous fury in them, who the minute that a Viegas or whoever that other mouth-breathing knuckle walker was, the minute they file, the first thing they're met with, before they're even met with an answer to the suit, is a motion for Rule 11 sanctions by the court for filing a knowingly frivolous lawsuit. You know, demand attorney's fees, filing fees, you know, lawyers know how to churn a file. And there we go. Darlene in Connecticut says, and I have three words for you. Judge Chad Meredith. That's the judge that Mitch McConnell and President Biden allegedly struck a deal over nominating. And, of course, he's another one of those misogyny judges. Does appear to be blowing up in their faces, though, and I hope it does so with spectacular effect. Little bastard doesn't need to be anywhere near the federal courts. Let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robin. It's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
How you doing? Good. Being traced here down in Rhodes Island.
Oh, really? Again. Nice. Nice.
Our usual spot in Narragansett that we go to.
Oh, I bet it's beautiful.
I sent you. Yeah, it's, you know, we've been kind of lucky up here as far as, like, you know, not having 100-degree weather so far, knock on wood. But it's a nice sea breeze right now, and we had a lick.
I was going to say there must be, you must be somewhere near the shore, because I heard a little, the effect of a little bit of maybe sea breeze blowing across your microphone.
Yes, sir. There's also cars. There's a two-way road here. It's kind of busy-ish. Right at Scarborough Beach. We're directly right across from the entrance where the parking lot is. We're at the Scarborough Beach Motel right across the street. So, yeah, it was awesome. We got down about 12 noon, got on the beach, and then left about 3 o'clock. And then they had like a loudspeaker came over. Can't go in over your knees. Like, there's a little bit of a riptide going on, I guess. It's windy. It's windy. Which is great, you know.
Any shark signs or anything?
I've seen the helicopters go by, you know, kind of lowish, and I'm like, okay, they're probably looking for sharks. Because there's been a lot of, I think, this summer so far, incidents here and there on the eastern shores of the United States. But nothing here, no, as far as sharks. I think it's just a riptide. So they put over the loudspeaker, hey, no, can't go in over your knees. But by that time, we literally can walk to the beach. Like, we park in the hotel, and we walk across the street, and it's like a 5-minute walk. So, and we just set up and, you know, just walk back. So, but, it's a nice sea breeze right now, and it's probably about 78, 79 degrees.
Oh, that sounds heavenly.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, so far, I mean, it could happen anywhere. Look in Europe, look at just the 100. It's a worldwide heat emergency, I saw.
Oh, yeah. The UK has been keeping temperature records for like 300 plus years. And they broke them all to hell today. 102.4, I think.
My God, they don't have air conditioning over there on a large scale like we do.
No.
Because it doesn't get that hot. And that goes for what? Most of Western Europe as well, right?
I mean,
they just don't get that hot. They're not used to it. We are. I mean, we're used to having this kind of weather, hot, hot, extreme weather. That's like a whole new kettle of fish for them.
Well, and it's probably why they're more inclined to take climate change seriously.
You know,
that's what this is.
I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know what it's going to take. Did you, I noticed, was it on The Guardian? I saw an article over the weekend, Robert Reich. No, wait a minute. Was it Robert? No, I think it was, it was Harvard's program. Saying something about how the Fed could buy up the oil industry. Just buy up all the assets, sell them off to the, you know, to the public, so to speak, and take over and just go green on a large scale, just like, and I guess subsidize, I don't know, the board members or whatever. I guess the board, I don't know, we'll do all the like talking about the big ones, Exxon Mobil, Phillips, all those, where you would buy up the assets and then, I don't know, tie them into the green. Just go green nationally. I mean, the whole world's got to go green. I mean,
well, you know, it's interesting you raise that, Kevin, because something that I've said here for a very long time, and I was discussing it offline with Chris in Germany. The longer we wait, the more harsh the remedies we're going to have to take will be on just, you know. Because, because you know, our betters will never allow themselves to be subjected to the really hard realities. They'll figure out some way. But because we have waited so long already, and we continue to wait, I don't think that people fully understand just how difficult this can be. And what scares me is that if we ever get to the point where we take the necessary steps, it may very well, just because of the nature of, you know, humans being humans, it may very well wind up being almost counter-revolutionary. I hate to go to an analogy like this, but, you know, the children of Israel get deep into Sinai, and they start pissing and moaning at Moses, saying, you know, at least we had three cots and a hot with Pharaoh. We're going to die out here in the damn desert. Look at you.
Yeah.
And...
But I think as we get more of the 100-degree weather on a larger scale all over the world, I think eventually people are going to be like, whoa, okay, we got to do something. And hopefully that'll spur governments to, like, just nationalize power. Because if we nationalize power on a large scale across the world, then I think we can lick this. It's just, the money's just too good for...
Well, you've still got technological questions that have to be sorted. You've got to figure out a way to, among other things, you've got to be able to get the power from point A to point B over some fair, you know. I remember years and years and years ago, they used to talk about how there's like 40 square miles of Nevada that could power the entire United States on solar. But the problem, there are similar statistics with regard to wind in North Dakota, but you have to get the power from there to where people need it. And that was a big discussion a lot of years back, was, you know, what we need is grid 2.0.
Yeah, we need a complete overhaul. And, you know, it would have to be a national thing. And, of course, you know, you're running with all the different states saying, oh, well, we're not about it. You know, we're going to do our own thing, you know, like Texas and stuff like that. But getting off the subject, you know, the Garland thing with the a memo from Barr.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't surprised. You know, it was kind of deflating the balloon, but you could just see this was the way it was playing out because he hadn't done anything up to this point. You know what I mean? So.
Right. I mean, look at the slaps on the wrist that have been handed out in regard to the insurrection.
And you got to wonder where Biden, you know, Biden's been pretty quiet about all this stuff. He hasn't really, I mean, when he first got elected, he said a few things about it, but my God, I can't remember the last time he said anything about January 6th. Could you? Biden?
No, I mean, no. And you know, see, he and Garland are cut from that same cloth. They're institutionalists, so Biden's not going to say anything because he doesn't want to be perceived as trying to influence the DOJ, because that's the way the institutions used to work. You know, Trump threw all of that out the window.
Yeah.
Everything from Russia, you know, it's kind of like, well, now we live in an era where...
Russia, if you're listening, if you could find the Secret Service's emails, it'd be huge.
Yeah. And then you got the Secret Service itself. It's got to wonder what their loyalties are now. What's everything? It's crazy. It's disheartening. I don't know. Like, you know, you got this big thing coming up Thursday. I'm going to be watching it in my hotel room, and we're leaving Friday morning. So, but it's just it's a little disheartening. But I'm not surprised at the same time. You only could hope that, okay, so if it's not going to be Trump, then get everybody else. But what does that do? I really don't know. You know, if everybody else goes down and he doesn't, what does that really solve anything? I'm not sure. You know?
Well, if he doesn't go dead, somewhere along the way, the maggots have got to learn that this is still a going concern. if in fact we are still a going concern. That's my problem, Kevin. I think we're going to find out if we are, if we're still viable.
Yeah,
and
viability.
He can't. He cannot re-enter the White House.
No.
He simply must not be allowed to re-enter the White House.
And of course, you know, a lot of it hinders, you know, the so the Supreme Court with the states having the power, that only goes to presidential. It doesn't have anything to do with the Senate or the House, right? So if we can, I don't know, at least get the Senate and the House. And, I don't know. It's just crazy. Hey, man, I'll let you go. I'll let maybe somebody else call, but just wanted to.
Well, I hope you and Tracy have just the most wonderful time.
Yeah.
One of these days I've got to see the shore up in New England. I've had people tell me how wonderful it is. And
yeah, well, maybe we can set something up.
All of my beach experiences are, you know, basically Virginia. down in the Confederacy.
And yeah, I've been to Devil Hills.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what the beach would be like in a civilized state.
It's great. You're in Rhode Island. It's better than Cape Cod. Cape Cod's in mass is a little more congested, and here in Rhode Island, it's way more laid back here.
I love laid back. Well, y'all have a wonderful time while you're there. I bet there's some great eating to be done. Goodness gracious, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, we got a reservation tomorrow at a place called Trio in downtown Narragansett. It's a nice spot. They got an outdoor dining patio there, which is great for COVID and everything. You know, still got to keep thinking about that. And then we're going to meet up with a family friend of hers tomorrow. We're going to go to another place on the other side of here and come back Friday. So I can't wait. Like I said, Thursday night, if I'm still awake, I'll be watching the hearings.
you might want to get some sort of potable to have for that, because at this point in time, it can get wacky real fast.
Right. Yeah. Lots of things. It's pretty fluid. Yeah. No doubt.
Well, listen, y'all. Again, have a great time. Say hi to Tracy for me. Y'all take care.
I will. Okay. You too, Robin. All right. Bye.
Kevin and Tracy at the beach in Rogues Island. Aw. Devoutly to be wished. Oh God, I bet the food is fantastic. Well, it's kind of a little bit like food porn. Both lines are open if you'd like to get in on the conversation. You're more than welcome to. Ron and Raleigh says, what we need is for the government to go through the papers they stole from Nikola Tesla after he died and look at his plans to transmit power through the air. Probably have to get around, probably a few, more than a few pages in the notebooks going on. The Jews! Because, I mean, he did have that problem. We have the ability to transmit. It's not a secret. Transmitting electricity. I mean, I actually learned about a little bit about this a long time ago from a dear friend. You could literally put satellites with huge solar panels in space, collect it, and beam it to Earth stations in various parts of the country. It's kind of like, solar energy in space is kind of like drinking. It's kind of like drinking from the tap, fresh and unadulterated, right? And we could do that, and you wouldn't have to worry about airplanes flying through the beam or anything like that, but. Damn. I mean, at one point in time, early in the development of the interweb tubes, power companies. What? Oh, my God, I can't imagine Just stop. I can't imagine Appalachian Power trying to be an internet service provider. But there was some talk of, you know, that power companies could just use their existing infrastructure to provide internet services to homes because they're already ubiquitous and they're in there. And a lot of people looked up and said, "No, no, I don't want my internet coming through my electric wires." And so there wasn't much heard about that afterward. But speaking of electricity, folks who were taking the tourist trip to visit Hoover Dam today got a little bit of a surprise. Up on the dam, you know, you can observe the power station down below at the excessively reduced and diminished Lake Mead. And imagine and it was, you know, a little bit after 10 a.m. Pacific daylight time. Let's get these things right. The turbine house there at Hoover Dam. Well, part of it exploded. And the Boulder City, Nevada Fire Department was en route to an emergency call. They said that at 1:31 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which would be 10:31 Pacific. No word as to cause as yet, but the electricity generated by Hoover Dam lights up all the neon in Las Vegas and provides some power to California and Arizona, too. 4 billion kilowatt hours of hydroelectric power each year. And, you know, I've seen the video. And it's like, I don't know, maybe a transformer caught fire. Something went bang. Maybe it happens all the time. But they're just right here, right now. It feels like there's a little bit of something. It just feels like another day in the ongoing march to the apocalypse. Randy Radar says Tesla's invention works, but it would sure clobber the broadcast spectrum. Would it take out Fox News? And we were talking about the extreme heat. Kevin and I were talking about the extreme heat in Europe. Well, they got to 104 degrees Fahrenheit at, I think, Heathrow Airport in London. And apparently 104 degrees Fahrenheit at Luton Airport, not Heathrow. London Luton Airport, about 30 miles north of London. They had to suspend flights because their runway melted. London Luton Airport reporting it was a surface defect. We've identified on the runway. Small section of the surface lifted because it melted. And the Luton area on Monday got up to 95 degrees. They reopened after a few hours. But it makes you kind of wonder about, because I remember this story coming out of Alabama with a heat wave a few years ago. The nuclear power plant at Brown's Ferry, as operated by the Tennessee Valley Authority, boondoggle. The reactor is cooled with water from the Tennessee River. And they had to suspend power generation at Brown's Ferry because the water of the Tennessee River got too hot just because weather, to be able to cool the reactor effectively. Remember, this is the nuclear reactor that once came near meltdown when some technicians were looking for a gas leak with a candle and found one. Also Monday, the East Midlands Railway in London put out a warning, told people not to travel today because might be a mite hot in the cars, and that the tracks themselves are 20 degrees warmer than the air, so when it got to 104 degrees, that meant that the tracks were around 124 degrees. And, well, when we reach those sorts of temperatures, it can cause the track to buckle and bend. This is a significant safety issue, given the train speeds of up to 125 miles per hour. So they either canceled trains or they reduced them to 20 miles per hour speeds in other areas. And shortly before 1 o'clock today, they hit the hottest temperatures they've ever known on Turf Island, namely 40.2 degrees Celsius, 104 degrees Fahrenheit. At Heathrow. And that's 1.5 degrees Celsius, curious number that, hotter than the previous record, which was only set in 2019. Well, thank God climate change is what's the term?
It's a Chinese hoax. Designed to destroy our golf courses and our industry.
What's that old saying? The condemned ate heartily. Feels like us, doesn't it? Oh, let's get in it. Damn climate change news is so—it's just so darn grim. Let's get back to something we can enjoy. Let's go over to Maryland. They're going to have an attorney general's race. Maryland's kind of blue, mostly blue, is blue. But nonetheless, they went to the polls and elected Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican, to run the state. So you can't just discount Republicans entirely. Well, they've got a hopeful for the Attorney General's office by the name of Michael Perutka. Somehow or another, I remember reading about Michael Perutka somewhere along the way. Yeah, and who knows? Republicans might run to the polls to vote for this fascist ass. Among other things, he proudly will tell anybody that marriage equality should be banned, and that abortion must be outlawed because it goes against, quote-unquote, God's law. Now, how someone with a mind as tiny as that of Michael Perutka can suppose to know the mind of God, well, that just sort of, no, flummoxes me. And among other things, this Lulu says that public schools is a communist plot to transform America away from a Christian worldview. And even while Governor Larry Hogan was trying to protect his state from COVID, well, Michael Perutka says, if I get to be your attorney general, I'm going to investigate that Larry Hogan, because he tried to tooken away your freedom by making people wear them masks. He even attends a mask hole COVIDiot rallies. What happened, he said at a rally in March, what happened was so notorious, it was blatant, so obvious. A constitutional, God-fearing Attorney General of Maryland can do something about that. He can impanel grand juries. He can bring prosecutions against people who violated your rights. And you'd like to think that this guy's just a nut job, but the maggot base in Republican is no different than the maggot base in Alabama or the maggot base in Idaho. And you know what? He might just get the nomination for Attorney General. Oh, and by the way, one last thing about Michael Perutka. Yeah. He's a former member of the board of directors of the League of the South. That's a gang of neo-Confederates. You might recall that the League of the South, a couple of years ago, declared their undying devotion and allegiance to white folks in Russia. Yeah, Michael Perutka is apparently one of those forget-hell types. And he says he's still pissed off that Maryland didn't secede from the Union and fight for the old butternut and gray back in that little dust-up between 1861 and 1865. It's kind of weird to think about Maryland being all bizarre and maggoty, but, well, there's a member of the House of Representatives by the name of Andy Harris from Maryland, and he was up to his Neanderthal eyebrow in attempts to overturn the 2020 election. And in an investigation, the Baltimore Sun reported that they reached out to 10 state Republicans, including state party leaders, elected officials, and candidates, and wanted to know what they thought about the J6 committee finding that Harris met with Nitwit Nero and other seditious members of his cabal, and was actively involved, no kidding, in trying to arm twist Mike Pencilneck Geek into overturning the elector tallies. And in the same Baltimore Sun story, State Delegate Kathy Zaliga responded to the Baltimore Sun and said, questioning the outcome of a presidential election is nothing new. Hillary Clinton told her supporters not to accept her loss in 2016. Yeah, because I know you were there. I was there when there were tens of thousands of us right there storming the Capitol for Hillary. No, oh, wait, that never happened. And then a Republican Party official in Maryland by the name of Tom Kennedy said, Jamie Raskin, what everybody forgets is that thanks to the Democrats objecting to election results has practically become an American tradition. Jamie Raskin never tried to overturn the 2016 election. And a spokesperson for Republican Governor Larry Hogan, previously mentioned, said, why don't y'all go and check out the interview I gave on WBAL? Well, somebody asked him on WBAL about Harris being there in the midst of the hatching of the plot. And Governor Larry Hogan said, well, I don't know anything about the meeting, and unfortunately I had about a 14-hour day last Tuesday, so I wasn't watching television, so I didn't see the hearing. Maggots, with apologies to Gertrude Stein, a maggot is a maggot is a maggot is a maggot. California maggots are no different from Alabama maggots, from Idaho maggots, from Michigan maggots, Maryland maggots. And I think, sort of coming full circle to what we were talking about at the beginning, if something is not done about Donald Trump, and if we don't see a lot more harsh penalties for the people who tried to overturn this government, y'all, they're going to do it again. Just are. And if you hated January 6th, 2020, I mean 2021, rather, if you hated that, you have no idea what that same day in January of 2025 is going to look like. And you can't help wondering what it's going to take to motivate our side to take this shit seriously. Because when I see things like the Merrick Garland memo, and I see the responses, it feels like there's a, you know, that we've been sold. We talked about that. We're screwed. And then you're mad and you go home. I don't mean you, but... Oh, and it wouldn't be Titanic Tuesday without a marginal Trailer Queen sighting, cue ball. She went on some podcast that's run by that the Newsmuck outfit and talked to some dude bro by the name of Rob Carson and said she is personally insulted. Personally insulted by reproductive rights. I sincerely wish I was kidding. I'm not. Oh no.
That you know, you as a woman are proud to be a woman, and this nonsense is an affront to all women, don't you suppose?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. It's insulting. And, you know, the very idea that women's rights don't matter anymore is, and which is what they say in our stance for pro-life, is we support women, we support their pregnancies, we support them being mothers, and even if it's a circumstance that they didn't plan, we support women. We also support women's rights, our right to privacy, our right to have privacy in our bathrooms, our right to compete in our own women's sports without being threatened by biological men. And so, yes, all of this is a slap in our face, and I'm standing up for it.
You should.
Yes, we should. We have to, not only for...
Yes, we should. We absolutely should. What, she fucking Minnie Mouse now?
She's completely okay with the government forcing women to give birth. What she's really worried about is who's going potty where.
That's where the women's rights are really at risk, in the potty and in sports.
You know, you can almost see what the 100-meter hurdles with a woman 7 months pregnant forced to carry it to term, and she's over here worrying about, are they all biological? Dick or no dick? We support them being
mothers, even if it's a circumstance that they didn't plan. Oh.
In other words, you tried not to get pregnant, but you're pregnant. Tough shit. How can she say we support the right to privacy when one of her hero Supreme Court justices is demanding that that very idea be stricken from the annals of American constitutional law? I mean, we know that Marginal Trailer Queen was kind of caught with a gym bunny boy. Did she get pregnant every time that she got it on with her gym bunny boy? Oh, Lord, this is another one of those moments where we need some subversion. We need to know how many abortions Marginal Trailer Queen has had. And maybe they should, I don't know, maybe they should check in and have some of those fetus fetishists counsel Marjorie about all the precious human life she's ended. Because one thing I found out just in the course of conversation is, and is a silence that we need to break. Is that a lot of women I know, women who have families, because remember, most of the women who have abortions already have kids, a significant number of them, and I've heard some stories. And I just about bet you that if you go talk to National Right to Life, there's a lot more women in those groups who've had them. You know, where do you think they found the woman who moaned and groaned to Congress and got set straight? By Lucy McBath. The numbers. Are not minuscule. And if ever there was a time for destigmatizing this, the time is now. I had a note from our pal, Joy in Ann Arbor, from yesterday's show. Great reminder about using the correct medical term spontaneous abortion in place of miscarriage. I'm working on making this important switch. May I suggest another? Of late, I've heard a few male creatures in these discussions, why politicians are having such discussions is beyond me, refer to the birth canal. This is galling. We need to stop calling it a birth canal and start calling it a sexual freedom canal. Because our lives are about more than how Christo-fascists define the purpose of our bodies. Not every woman wants an eerie canal. Wait a minute. Bonus points for the use of eerie. It's true. It's only a birth canal. It's kind of like the whole concept of commander-in-chief. In the Constitution of the United States, the president is vested with the powers of the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the United States in time of war. And in terms of actions he takes that have a direct bearing on how the military operates and behaves. pay attention. Words mean things. See how many times, and you don't even have to be watching Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to notice this. See how many times Democrats do it, Republicans do it. They did it with they did it with Dim Leader. They did it with the COVID Caligula. They do it with Biden. They did it with Obama. The phrase, our commander-in-chief. Now, I know I'm a contrarian. But no president of the United States ever has been or ever will be my commander-in-chief because I'm not in the military. He is not our commander-in-chief. He is the military's commander-in-chief. And by the same token, a birth canal is a birth canal when there's a baby coming down it. The rest of the time, not so much. Vagina will do nicely. Birth canal. But it's what it is it's reductivist. All of these things are efforts to reduce women to their reproductive processes. Kind of leaves menopausal women out in the cold. Women unable to conceive. Intersex women. You know, XXY women. They exist. More than most people know. And they're simply not in the calculus. But I know no small number of women who, although they are past childbearing age, are fucking furious, and rightfully so. Birth canal. But really, pay attention to these things. Use these terms. Sexual freedom canal. Spontaneous abortion. I've sort of created a little mental tick, I guess you could say, where anytime I see the word miscarry, my brain now says spontaneous abortion. Sometimes I say it out loud. Because we've already seen what the next front is. Oh, the 10-year-old didn't have an abortion. Oh, an ectopic, the removal of an ectopic pregnancy isn't an abortion. And if they get away with this, it will actually affect how medical texts are written. And we don't want to go down that Handmaid's Tale road, even though we're already on it. Does Margarine Trader Gangrene, Darlene in Connecticut asks, look like someone that would give a rat's ass about the poor little fetuses she aborted? Oh, no. I'm not suggesting she did. I'm just suggesting that she's probably had one or two or a half dozen. Because she does seem like the kind of trash that's exactly like the women that she complained, you know, because the Republicans are all the time saying, you know, it's not a form of birth control. Thank you, man person. Because it is. Because sometimes other forms of birth control, you know, fail. But she seems the type to go and have one at the drop of a hat, or I don't know, a sweaty gym towel. Marginal Trailer Queen Lee in New York says her body. Stop it, Robin. Her body knows how to shut that down. It's only her mouth that doesn't get shut down. Lord, no, it doesn't. And, of course, there's nobody on our side who sees her walking out on the Capitol Plaza and says,
Marjorie Taylor Gangrene's got the best booty.
No, that's misogynistic Republican men. A lot of the men on our side have actually made strides toward trying to be a little more decent. Trying. Reducing women, Matt in San Francisco says, men have to reduce women because all men are dicks. I heard it somewhere. There's some good ones out there. A lot of them here. Breaking news from the New York Times. It looks like revelations coming out of Fulton County, Georgia, show that 16 maggots who tried to act as false electors during the 2020 coup may wind up being indicted by the Fulton County Grand Jury. It's a start. And they're not being real shy. Among other things, Republican State Senator Burt Jones, who was a Trump elector and the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor is the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor in 2022 midterms, has put a motion before the court trying to quash his subpoena. That will be publicly televised on Thursday. A lot of good watching on Thursday. 11 out of the 16 Trump electors in Georgia are now furiously trying to chuck Rudy Giuliani and Dr. John Eastman under the bus. They've tried to put together a timeline that shows that they couldn't have been any part of the effort to get arm twist Mike Pence into overturning the election results in Georgia. From a footnote on page 12, according to Politico, the pettifoggers for the false electors said,
it has also been reported in the media that certain high-level members of the Trump team, Mr. Eastman, Mr. Giuliani, et al., developed a different plan in late December 2020 after Christmas to, among other things, attempt to convince Vice President Pence to count these contingent electoral slates as the valid elector slates despite the lack of any successful judicial ruling. To the extent that these reports are accurate, which we have no way of knowing, the nominee electors did not and could not have had any involvement in or knowledge of any such plan, as it was not even conceived until several weeks after the GOP electors had completed their contingent electoral slates on December 14th, 2020, and in any event, it's always a little worrisome when your lawyer uses the "in any event," which is another way of saying, and even if I'm lying, it was never disclosed to or discussed with the nominee electors at the time. And then there's some pogo sticking up onto the cross. The Trump electors have received abuse and harassment. They've even been told that they're targets of the Fulton County DA's investigation.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I missed a cowbell, says Billable Rick. You missed one for Lee's comment that Ms. Three Names Body knows how to shut that thing down, but it doesn't know how to shut her mouth. Thank you, Billable. It's always good to know you've got my back when I miss one. Remember when everybody went to the theater, Lee, in New York, asked to see the Birth Canal monologues? Or am I misremembering the title? You might be. Birth Canal monologues. Okay, that's two for you, Lee.
Targets of the poor babies.
On a little development in Ohio. Twice now, the Supreme Court of the state of Ohio has rejected Republican attempts to gerrymander the living bejesus out of that benighted state. Again, I don't know how you get... Well, they drew it, and then they redrew it.
Did we take all the racism out?
No. Good. The Supreme Court of Ohio ruled again that the map drawn by the Republicans favors one political party over another, regardless of how the elections turned out all over the state. We hold that the March 2nd plan unduly favors the Republican Party and disfavors the Democratic Party in violation of the Ohio Constitution. It was a 4-3 decision. Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, Justice Michael Donnelly, Justice Melody Stewart, and Justice Jennifer Brunner all voted to reject the map. And pointed out with some specificity that the map, the commission charged with creating the districts had created Democratic districts with razor-thin advantages while the Republican-leaning seats comfortably favor Republican candidates. Imagine that. Only three of the Democratic-leaning seats have more than 52% Democratic advantage, whereas every Republican-leaning seat has a more than 53% GOP advantage. Every one of them. The court's opinion went on to say, considering that Democratic candidates have received about 47% of the vote in recent statewide elections, this probable outcome represents only a modest improvement over the previously invalidated plan. Y'all quit cheating. So they're going to have to go back and do it again. They will not do it right that time either. Because, well, they got to cheat to win. And then they'll take it to the Supreme Court. And you know what happens there, right? Hint, nothing good. Oh, I just got some good news from Arnold in PA. He just sent me a message saying, we're going to Netroots, he and the Rick Smith Show. That's super exciting. I haven't seen Arnold and Rick since July of 2019 in Philly. And Netroots is going to be in Pittsburgh. And I'm really looking forward to hopefully being there. And that's like the 18th to the 20th of August. Whew! Pittsburgh in August. It gets a little hot. Yeah, Arnold, I agree. It's going to be a blast. Yeah, Emilio says, violates the Ohio Constitution. It's almost as if Republicans hate this country, the states, counties, people, common sense, and simple common decency. And probably puppies, smiles, kittens, and people not being miserable. The list is not it's not exactly what I would call exhaustive, but you're not far off, Emilio. Lee says, thank you, Bill and Robin, for the cowbells. My collection is growing. Keep them on the mantle. It's a great place... Great place for them. That's where Mark Twain said that he kept all of his really fancy German compound nouns. Oh, and by the way, I don't do viewing tips very often, but I was on I was wandering around Hulu last night and we'd run out of episodes of The Orville to watch. And I found a lovely little documentary about Kurt Vonnegut, one of my heroes. And it said, hey, that Vonnegut, that looks good. I clicked on it. We got started. She fell asleep, and I finished the movie. It was very good. I suspect if you go to Hulu and just type in Vonnegut, you'll find it. It's very, very well made. And some of the stuff I knew just from reading Vonnegut. Other stuff I did not. And, wow. Really good documentary. So that's it. Let's see. Where are we going to wind up now? Let's see. We got down to $505 to go. So tomorrow we'll be at 805. Thank you to everybody who jumped in on that. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who participates in this program, who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. And thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room, joined by Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, keeping all the packets passing. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen, of course, to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks for getting it back up and running, Ben. That's so important and so helpful, and I so do appreciate it. We all do. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and the proud union shop that it is. Please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives. Ask them to please co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. God, how I'd love to be able to get back to D.C. and work that. It would be fantastic if we could. But it's kind of tough right now. Maybe someday. But in the meantime, your support means everything. Call them. If you've called them before, call them again. Annoy them. You know, don't be mean or anything. Don't be a maggot. And say, no, I really need you on this bill. It matters to me. I'm your constituent. Because it is the last best hope of Appalachia. Please stay safe. Congratulations, Flavio, getting your second Pfizer booster. Please get your second booster. Protect. Do what you can to protect yourself against BA4 and BA5. And BA what the fuck. Because it's on the way. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. For God's sakes, please wear a good mask when you're in areas with potentially unvaccinated people in it, and even vaccinated people. I mean, it's a weird damn disease, right? Use your hand sanitizer, maintain your social distance. And if some bleach blonde Republican comes burbling towards you talking about, well, we support a woman's right to privacy in the potty. Avoid that trailer queen like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.